Revelations continue to surface from St. Mary's University that show that the pro-rape chant recently made public in a CBC article is not an isolated frosh incident. The chant, which promotes underage and non-consensual sex with girls, has been going on for years, and it would appear that concerns about it and other sexist practices at St. Mary's have fallen on deaf ears at both the student union and student services levels. Reaction from spokespeople at the university appears to follow the general guidelines of shock, followed by disappointment, and a pledge to do better next time. There isn't much, however, in terms of acknowledgement that the chant might be part of an endemic sexism on campus. In this interview, I speak with Dr. Wilma Vanderveen, a lecturer in the sociology and criminology departments at St. Mary's. Among other classes, Vanderveen is teaching social power relations this fall at SMU. For the Halifax Media Co-op, I'm Miles Howe. Wilma Vanderveen, you're a lecturer in the Department of Sociology and Criminology at St. Mary's. Given the recent developments related to this very sexist and rape-charged chant that has emerged, what is first your reaction to this?
Well, I guess I'm not actually surprised. These sorts of things, maybe not a specific chant per se, but having students, female students on campus not feeling safe, the fact that there's, you know, safe walk programs, that such programs actually have to exist where women who need to get to their car or maybe to the bus stop or whatever, you know, can call up security to get somebody to accompany them so that they, you know, don't feel that they will be attacked perhaps. So I was not surprised by this at all. It's, of course, upsetting and disheartening. If anything, it's saddening that such a situation occurred, but I'm not really surprised because of the nature of the, you know, patriarchal society we live in, the fact that university space is clearly male space predominantly, and by that, you know, if you look at sort of the who are the powerful people on campus within the administration or faculty, and often within the student body, at least at St. Mary's University, particularly within the student body, the leadership is male.
We're looking at a chant that probably wouldn't be allowed to be happening in a society outside of, let's say, a university campus. What we're learning is that this has been going on for years now at St. Mary's. Is this a question of just sort of hormones running wild of university students, or is there some kind of complicity throughout the whole campus that is allowing this to go on?
I mean, hormones is the excuse, which I don't buy it. You know, we're talking about young adults, and not that they're fully mature, perhaps, but one would hope that the education, the parenting, the other sort of socialization that they've experienced, you know, for their first, 16, 17, 18 years of their life would have led them to a point where they respect both genders, respect themselves, respect men and women, and that, you know, people are to be treated with equality, that, you know, issues of sexism, racism, the other isms, so to speak, hopefully would have been, you know, addressed within their, if not education, at least by their parents, or, you know, but obviously within their peer groups, perhaps, unfortunately, there is still a lot of big influence for teenagers is going to be media, and media is clearly, you know, big business and about the, thanks to the psychologists who've proven that sex sells. So, you know, the sexualization of women as objects has been, you know, been ongoing for millennia. You just sort of think, thanks to the women's movements, the various waves of women's movements, you'd like to think that things have progressed a little bit more beyond this point, but unfortunately, there's still a lot of work to do, and today's young men, I believe, this sort of took place, you know, I guess the idea was that, well, university students, even if they are first year, but, you know, that age group, that they would have some level of good judgment in terms of, you know, thinking about words do harm people. It's not innocent words. Words have a lot of meaning behind them, and I would have thought young adults should hopefully know that, but unfortunately, as you saw in the video of the chant too, you know, there were other women there too, and so they're often either feeling powerless and trying to, you know, those who did, it seems in the last few years there were some people who did actually note that they were upset by the language but were silenced or were ignored or perhaps ridiculed or thinking it's like, oh, you're taking this too seriously. So they kind of are dismissed, you know, invalidated, and unfortunately, you know, we need to, there's still a lot of work that has to be done for the socialization of men today, and women for that matter as well.
We're starting to read stories in the media of other students coming forward with a variety of examples of sexist behavior that's made them feel uncomfortable. Group orientation leaders sort of bragging about a variety of events at parties that were going on that, you know, constitute statutory rape. Names of frosh groups such as Blurred Lines or Night Ticklers. Are you hearing anything from your students that sort of substantiating that this is a more endemic problem than just a chant?
Certainly. I've only been recently back at St. Mary's for a couple of years, but I was there previously in the early 2000s, and at the other institutions where I've taught, I have had women students come to me, whether it was to essentially, you know, tell of the experience that they were date raped and, you know, what can they do, which is a pretty severe situation, but more to even within group work, let's say, that I have my students engage in, that the sexism in those group work environments is amazing, how, you know, the men have certain expectations of what the women will do within a group. From something as simple as, well, you're the one who's going to take notes and write up the paper, aren't you? You know, the expectation that women supposedly have better handwriting is still out there. But more so, you know, being told what to do by the other men, or just, again, cracking jokes, laughing. I teach sociology, so often issues of gender are going to be part of perhaps the research projects they work on or group discussions they have in class. And it's quite appalling, and it's unfortunate that sometimes I think younger people aren't able to pick up on it so quickly, or if they pick up on it and they realize, hey, there's something that's been said here that's quite offensive, they don't know how to address it, they feel powerless. They're not sure where they can get support. So I think this is something that's endemic and has been ongoing for a long time. And yes, you know, at St. Mary's, clearly there have been people coming forward now in the last few years about this specific chant, but there's also somebody on campus who, a staff person who's sort of a conflict mediator, where people can come to her in confidence, you know, and talk about situations they've experienced, and it's all, you know, confidential. And when possible, you know, the cases are made against certain individuals for harassment behavior. But it takes a lot of courage to come forward, I think, and a lot of young women will lack that confidence in knowing that there is actually support out there. But it's clearly, the statistics show that this is something that has been ongoing. There is the data to prove that this sort of sexual harassment, sexism, and related, you know, do happen at St. Mary's. But it's not just to St. Mary's. You know, I think it is across the board, across North America. I think you'd find it in Australia and New Zealand as well. Maybe perhaps not so much in some Western European countries, but, you know, in terms of the English language world.
Now, what do you make of the university's response? It sort of appears to be like, well, we can just sort of learn from this, and we're sorry, and this is kind of a surprise to us, and we'll do better next time. Are we looking at St. Mary's looking to sort of protect its brand, or do you feel that this is an adequate response from the university student services staff and the student union president in particular?
I guess in terms of the university administration's response, in particular, I guess Dr. Colin Dodds, who's probably being told partially what to say from the external affairs folks, but at the university, it's laughable that he was interviewed. I saw the interview on CTV News yesterday on television, the 6 o'clock news with Steve Murphy, and I was stunned that when he was asked, you know, why has this happened? How has this happened? He can't explain it, and it's shocking. That is what I find so shocking, that he is oblivious to the fact that this is an endemic situation of the sexism on campus, the patriarchal nature of of St. Mary's, and he can't explain it. And instead of perhaps maybe going and talking to folks in the sociology and criminology department and other, you know, disciplines who have a lot of a wealth of knowledge about these issues and could give him the data to sort of say, this is what's going on, and you should be aware of this, you should know this, or you should call upon us to give you that information if you're not aware. It's an absolutely laughable excuse of, oh, I have no idea where this comes from. That makes him look really stupid, for one thing, but it's absolutely shocking that he, as you know, a leader of a post-secondary educational institution, doesn't know about the fact that this sort of stuff goes on and is rampant, you know, within the institution as well as within greater society. So, and it was quite disheartening too that he, you know, claims to be oblivious to what, how that had come about. In terms of the student association president and leadership, I guess, and orientation leadership, I mean, you really would have hoped that they had better judgment. But it is quite also very disappointing that they're just sort of labeling it to a certain extent as, oh, a bunch of bad apples. Again, that's dismissive, sort of painting it in a way that it's just a one-off situation, completely ignoring the facts if they bother to, you know, look at the facts. That this stuff is endemic, and it is part of this so-called, you know, the rape, quote-unquote, rape culture. I'll stop there.
I know that this is a social problem, but looking at sort of the microcosm or the fishbowl that is the issue at St. Mary's right now, where do we begin to address this issue properly in your mind?
It needs, to a certain extent, you need the people who are in power to, you know, come forward and create spaces where they can hear what are possible solutions from the people who have been impacted. But we have to recognize that those who have been impacted by what took place, who could, you know, be suffering, you know, personal trauma, crisis, just be incredibly upset by how this whole issue has been handled, whether they've been direct victims or not, of perhaps themselves, of some sexual harassment. It's hard to sort of expect them to come forward and say, look, this is what I need to have done. But the leadership can create safe spaces, ways to, whether it's anonymously even, you know, but having roundtable discussion groups or, you know, weekly meetings. Or there has to be a place where people can come together to talk about how they're feeling and then eventually, you know, what can be done. I think talking circles would be like a great idea. I'm concerned, you know, in a sense that often the people who would want to do something about this, it's not going to be the people who are responsible, you know, for what happened as well, that they'll just sort of, they'll go and do their sensitivity training, which is a joke, an utter joke. It's sort of, you know, only addressing the symptom. It's not addressing the root cause of why they did what they did and why they thought it was, you know, acceptable what they did. Didn't even think about what the meaning of what they were doing. So, you know, some pretty in-depth, I guess, discussions, conversations need to take place, and it's not simply about, and a larger discussion, town hall meetings or something to that effect perhaps could be taking place on campus, but it needs to be a regular, consistent issue that's addressed, you know, ongoing. I'm concerned that, you know, with mainstream media in particular, it's kind of like, oh, in a few days the issue is going to be, you know, off the radar again, and things will just sort of go back to normal, and yes, these folks will have their sensitivity training, and nothing will really have changed. There is an event that I guess the Women's Center, along with a few other organizations, I believe, in the community have put on called Consent Fest. I gather the Student Society at St. Mary's denied that event funding. So, you know, that could be, they could, you know, host that event and cover the complete costs of it, because clearly there is money within the Student Association to cover events and sponsor groups and that kind of thing. So, you know, put your money where your mouth is type of idea, but also, you know, the leadership needs to listen to those who have been impacted and not, if anything, I personally feel the whole leadership should be resigning, you know, not just simply, you know, anybody who is sort of coordinating, responsible for seeing that chant actually come together, be organized, practiced, mobilized students to come together, they all need to be losing their positions, whatever it is. It's not simply an apology is satisfactory. Or sensitivity training is satisfactory. A lot more has to be done in terms of showing, demonstrating, taking action to remedy the problem as such. But first they have to listen to those who've been impacted by it and you know, what it really means for them. And I think a talking circle kind of concept would be a great thing to happen.
Is that an issue that you are familiar with? We're hearing stories that the St. Mary's Women's Center, they've had, you know, real trouble getting funded. Is that an issue that you know anything about?
Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate that, again, it's almost, you know, the Women's Center is isolated, and there's a perspective on most campuses across Canada that the Women's Center is this radical bunch of extremist feminists, so to speak, you know, male haters, etc., as such. And so SMUSA could perhaps do a bit of an education campaign towards themselves, as well as, you know, the student body of what this group is actually about and the importance of it, and the reasons for why they even have to exist. Why do we even have to have women's centers? In the perfect world, we hopefully wouldn't have to have them, but they need to exist because of the rape culture that we live within, because of the patriarchal nature of post-secondary education, as well as other institutions and the broader society. So the profile of the Women's Center hopefully will be raised, will be respected, will be admired and supported financially and other ways. But it can't be all up to them. It has to, you know, they are technically in the weaker position. And that's where I'm sort of saying why leadership of other parts of the university, including the administration, but it's a fine line that, let's say, faculty and university administration need to walk in terms of, there is this misogynist type of culture is not just within the student body, it's within other aspects of the institution as well. But because this particular situation has to do with what some students did, the solutions and action need to come from the students, with perhaps guidance from faculty and somehow maybe facilitating, you know, the actions that need to take place. But definitely the responsibility for the implementation, you know, of the actions to remedy the situation have to come from the people who were the perpetrators themselves.
And is there anything else you'd like to add today that we haven't addressed in this conversation?
I know there's a lot of commentary out there. I sometimes get caught up in reading the comments posted to different news articles that have been written about this story on, you know, various mainstream media outlets. You know, and there's fortunately it's only occasionally, but, you know, the dismissive of this political correctness take on it, you know, and I think people really need to recognize that words really do hurt people. You know, there's a lot of baggage associated with certain words, and it's quite shocking, you know, because I'm glad that people mentioned the Rehtaeh Parsons case as such, and, you know, in light of that fact, it's kind of, if we continue to let things just go and let them be and let people say what they want to say, and I'm not about seeking censorship or, you know, cutting down on freedom of speech, but we need to do a lot better job, you know, all people in society need to do a much better job with our young people and sort of, you know, and it's not about telling them what they should say or not say, it's about educating them, getting them to truly understand what is going on, and hopefully we can, you know, the good thing about this situation is that it's starting so many conversations, getting this issue again to the forefront, and that's a wonderful thing. And for, you know, good things come out of these bad things, which I guess is sort of that there's a bit of a silver lining, so that hopefully, you know, but let's not drop it. You know, this has to continue in terms of action and conversation.
Dr. Van Deveen, thanks so much for your time today.
You're welcome. Thank you very much as well.